Welcome to the Voice of St. Anthony Parish from Alston, Massachusetts, right here on WROL 950 AM 100.3 FM. And you can also hear us at CatholicAudioMedia.com. That's CatholicAudioMedia.com. Well, we have a special treat for you over the next several days and into next week. We're going to listen to Corey Fronten, who's going to talk to us about his work as a union organizer and a graduate student. So I'd like to welcome Corey Fronten here, who is now living out of the city. But when he was in the city, he was coming to church regularly here at St. Anthony Parish. And Corey, you have worked with putting together a union over at MIT, if I have that right.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Father. Cool to actually be on the podcast that I heard about so many times. But yeah, so I guess I was a rank and file organizer at MIT during the Graduate Student Union drive, which we were ultimately able to win by a 2-1 margin in our election. And yes, yeah, so I was a part of the organizing effort from some point a little ways before we had kind of gone public through to the election. And at that point, I had to kind of step back and let other people take leadership and, carry the weight of organizing, I should say. I wasn't really a leader so much as just an organizer. But so I can finish my thesis, which as we speak is being drafted and should be complete hopefully by the end of the week.
So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, from a fairly Catholic family. My uncle is a priest in the Archdiocese of Washington. My grandfather was a deacon. And I kind of grew up, going to, I think, Catholic schools there. Went to DeMatha Catholic High School in Hyattsville, Maryland for high school. Was a avid musician and a pretty good math student, and ended up doing an engineering degree at University of Maryland. And then after that, I kind of wanted to give back in some concrete way. So I went to work for Habitat for Humanity. And then I came up here to Boston, where I have been doing a PhD in engineering and applied math at MIT. So that's what brought me here and brought me to obviously St. Anthony's and also to the Union Drive.
And you're married with one child?
That's right, yeah. I got married a couple of years ago while I was in the middle of the PhD process, and we just had our first son, Cassius, about 6 months ago.
Wow, and that's great. That's great. Well, maybe we could start when we're talking about MIT. Why did you need to put together a union at MIT? What were the issues that needed to be addressed?
Yeah, absolutely. So from my perspective, I kind of got involved in, I guess, like some of the social organizations that exist at MIT. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, was doing it as a way to guarantee that our intramural hockey team would have continued and prosperous existence.
Oh, really?
and in the process of being a part of like the Graduate Student Association, which is, to be very clear, it's an organization at the pleasure of the institute, not a union. But as a part of that, you kind of start to know enough people and hear enough rumors about some of the ways that kind of graduate students can be subject to unfair and discriminatory treatment. And in addition to that, I also at a certain point was a member of the leadership of the Black Graduate Student Association. And as you can imagine, you also hear about quite a few other things like that there. And essentially what it comes down to is that, at a place like MIT, especially at a high level research university, but really any university, there's some combination of, scholarship and work that's being done. And in the case of a place like MIT, that work that's being done is often in the manner of research that is contracted out to companies, either at a large scale or a small scale. for, you know, exclusive access rights for those companies, for, you know, obviously fast track access to the labor market and probably discounts there. And also patents, which MIT ultimately holds and is able to profit off of if your work is patentable.
Really? Wait a minute. Let me just stop there for a second. Okay. Because obviously I'm a writer and those issues with copyrights and patents. So if you make a discovery at MIT, MIT gets the patent, not you? Or is that...
That's right. Your name is on it, but I think the ownership rights are retained by the university.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
So again, as a writer, that's like selling all rights to a publication.
Yeah. Yeah. Effectively. And there's a whole office at MIT in particular, not to kind of like, make a show of them, but there's an office there called the Technology Licensing Office, which is where you can go if you're a private company, and you can essentially then go and purchase the opportunity to use some of those patents and technology that MIT owns.
And if you discovered something and MIT, would you get any royalties?
I'm not exactly sure how the process works. I know that there are certainly ways that the ownership and royalties are shared amongst the kind of professors, and typically in science you call it a PI, a primary investigator. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are certainly going to have some access to that ownership, but still it's somewhat limited as to how much control they have relative to MIT.
Sure.
So that's a huge part of it. And then the other thing is also another thing that's kind of like invisible from the outside is that a lot of the times you have professors who are also operating on the side in some private capacity, making money off of the research progress that on a day-to-day is performed by graduate students as well. And so, you know, all these things are kind of part of what essentially amounts to an apprenticeship type right. work, where you're compensated by some combination of traditional financial remuneration, but also by some training opportunity. And mm-hmm. Exactly what the balance of that is, you know, not in your control. There's no negotiating for your salary. There's no student housing is not subsidized at MIT. It's at market or above market rates.
Really? I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So in a lot of cases, you know, you're paying you get paid what you get paid, or what the company tells you you get paid. You're very often going to pay the company back in terms of the rent you pay to them as your landlord, and you have very little control over it, in spite of the fact, obviously, that you're doing quite a bit of work in the process of doing your job.
And you're talking about Cambridge, right along the Charles River. At least that's where MIT is. So the market rates are going to be fairly high.
Yeah, absolutely. I lived in a bargain basement apartment with my wife and our child when we had in Alston, actually. And that was about $2,200 a month.
Wow.
And that compares to the kind of annual compensation that's around, I think, $40,000.
I have to tell you a story then, and this might kind of help people understand it in a way. My brother used to work in Silicon Valley, and it's a comparable situation because you got Stanford out there. And there was a guy, he was telling me he was working, and he was getting paid $40,000, and he used to bike to work because he couldn't afford a car.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. It's a little different here in Cambridge, but it's still, you know, if I'm talking to someone who's maybe listening in, and we have listeners all over the country who's listening in Texas, they may not understand $40,000 is not the same in Cambridge or in Silicon Valley as it is in we'll say Tyler, Texas.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And And I also would say that it's important to note that the kind of work that we do, even though it is in some sense, you know, apprentice work or instructive work, it still is of a lot of value. So for instance,
right.
You know, my research has been largely funded by a big airplane company, that on, almost weekly, you know, biweekly basis is checking in on the work that I'm doing and actively using it in, you know, their research and development, you know, stack, which, and in terms of, you know, remuneration for the labor, and fair remuneration for the labor, the folks that do those jobs are getting paid, you know, 3-4 times what we are as grad students.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow. So these were some of the issues that you that were part of. Of course, you know, there was probably a team putting together a student union.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were encouraged by a bunch of the recent graduate student union efforts at different universities. I know, it's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember which one of the universities in New York City. They had similar cost of living issues, kind of high costs and expectations of like extreme work hours for teaching and things like that. University of Michigan, for example, has had a graduate student union actually for decades.
Really?
Since, yeah. It goes back way further than you would have expected. But yeah, and they, you know, relative to other graduate student kind of situations, they're really well paid. They have like well-defined work hours and well-defined vacation policies, which are all things that, you know, as a graduate student worker at MIT have been, you know, kind of hazy. And it really comes down to, you know, how nice your advisor is and how willing they are to give you, you know, a normal life.
Sure.
To kind of have some control. So that's, you know, a handful of the reasons that you can look at for why we thought it was necessary to organize a union for ourselves.
We're going to listen to more from Corey over the next several days. In the meantime, you're listening to the voice of St. Anthony Parish from Allston, Massachusetts, right here on WROL 950 AM 100.3 FM. And don't forget, you can also hear us at CatholicAudioMedia.com. You can now leave a message for us, which we can air and discuss on this program. Just call 617-297-7452. That's 617-297-7452. 617-297-7452. Feel free to call, leave a comment, a question, or even feedback, and we may play it on the air. I can discuss your comment or question as well, so give that a try.
617-297-7452, 617-297-7452.
In Cristo vivimos.